Hi, and welcome to the Inside Out Security Show. I'm your host, Cindy Ng, and I'm joined by security practitioners Mike, Chris, and Killian. And our icebreaker question was inspired by an image that lists 10 things that will become obsolete thanks to IoT devices. And I wonder if you had to prioritize the list, what are three things you think would be obsolete first and why?
Well, this is Chris. I'm going to start with number three on the list, which is physical entertainment. I actually think this is funny because I realize I dug up a bunch of old cassette tapes and realized how long it's been since I even touched any physical media. So that's probably number one to go. I would say remote controls would be number two. And probably external storage devices would be number three for me. There's certain ones on here I definitely disagree with or hope don't go obsolete, but there's certain ones that are absolutely going the way of the Dodo. So,
what are ones that you think you hope won't go away and why?
Personal preference, rather keyboards not go away. I think I'm just used to that, but I'm sure I'd adjust if we phase them out. Service workers is, I think, the biggest one that I don't want to go obsolete.
Hi, this is Mike. I would like to get rid of all the service workers. Thank you.
In my list, I certainly don't want to get rid of, you know, service workers. I was a service worker for a long time doing stuff. I would rather be doing something else. And I would like to actually see all those people doing that, doing something else that they like. But the one out of this that I sort of disagree with is plows. I don't really know how Internet of Things is going to take away the tractor and plow. We still at some point need to turn over the soil to put the seeds in to get the food out.
My guess is it will probably be much like the personal car. It'll be in an autonomous unit, so you probably won't have a farmer driving the plow going back and forth in the field. This list is actually funny because we had this debate this week, well, the week that we're recording this at least, at the Gartner IAM conference with a couple colleagues, discussing the future of personal cars. And the consensus was that while there'll be some holdouts, probably in the not too distant future, a lot of it will go to the car as a service model. So you'll have less personal car ownership and more reliance on car services, and eventually autonomous cars could potentially take over that service as well too. So you'd lose the service workers in that industry, Uber and Lyft drivers. But to disagree with Mike, I don't actually want the service workers to go away. Think about when you have to call up your cable provider, trying to explain a problem or deal with an inflexible robot or a script can sometimes be really annoying. Having that bit of human interaction, despite what people might think about it, sometimes allows you to get a little bit further.
Thanks, guys. And for our regular listeners, if you enjoy our show, if you can rate and review our podcast on iTunes, we'll send you a deck of our InfoSec cards that's based on the Cards Against Humanity card game. To learn more, please visit Vronis.com/review. So we started a show with a few of our own predictions about the future. And on Forbes, there were about 60 predictions for 2018. And there's a lot that cybersecurity professionals are up against. And the author is expecting more attacks on the U.S. government infrastructure, how to enforce GDPR regulations for consumers' personal data, the riskiness in using IoT devices and biometrics. And more specifically, what intrigued me was that organizations are embracing the use of chatbots, and that financial institutions will start using chatbots to facilitate payments. And cyber criminals, they'll see it as an opportunity to impersonate users and take over their accounts.
Well, I definitely think there's going to be more chatbots. That is already happening. My credit card expired, and then, you know, I got the new one. And then I got a text message from AT&T that said, hey, you know, your credit card, you know, let me walk you through like updating it to the new one. And so, you know, it worked and I updated it. And then I put my credit card in and it went to some Ukrainian company I'd never heard of. No, it worked great. And I think was a lot better than essentially what's like a form letter. I think there's a time and a place for all these things.
You know what, Mike? Next time your credit card expires, you can just give me your email and password and the number, and I'll go ahead and update it for you. Real simple. You
credit know, card updating as a service. It's great.
White-hand glove treatment. You know, this is what I do for my VIP people. Just yeah. With the chat bots, it does help to deal with some, let's say, mundane tasks. Certain things like that will certainly make people more efficient. I know even here, there was talk about implementing a chat bot for a lot of the questions we get internally that are very, very basic, at least. Hey, do you have a document on GDPR? Hey, do you have a document on whatever compliance it happens to be? We get those requests a lot internally from our sales folks. So being able to have a chatbot automate a lot of that frees up, not that it's a ton of time, but it's, you know, minutes to stop whatever we're doing out of the day to reply to this and send them the same document. So it just makes things more efficient. But on the other hand, social engineering aspect you mentioned, it's always going to be a problem dealing with people. But in some ways, from a user perspective, I'd still personally rather deal with a human being. Going back to my comment earlier, when I actually had to call the cable company a couple weeks ago because I was going to cancel some services. It was too expensive and I don't watch TV. So when I called up and I talked to the person, you know, if it was a chatbot, he would have canceled it. But the guy ended up saying, just keep the services, we'll give you a better rate anyway. Again, not that I still watch them, but it was nice to have that pleasant human interaction. So I kind of got what I wanted with a reduced bill, and I didn't have to deal with the hassle of returning equipment or anything. It's like, don't worry about it, we'll give you the deal. In that case, I preferred the human interaction.
Let's continue talking about possibilities. One major possibility is the Australians, they might at some point have their government, they're considering selling or allowing companies to use their facial recognition database for a fee. And the article pointed out concerns over a lack of transparency and oversight on facial recognition programs. What are the pros and cons of this new approach to doing business where the government is basically selling their citizens' faces to companies? What are some pros to this and some cons?
At least they're selling it and making money. They could just have people steal the database and be done with it.
Well, this is where I feel like this is actually coming from. Because right now in the US, you know, there's been a lot of recent debate over, like, should social security numbers be used as an identification? Like, what's better, your social security number or your face? You know, and that's what this is that if you wanted to develop a system where you're doing credit card transactions and that as part of the anti-fraud, that there's a camera at the checkout that looks at your face and goes, oh yeah, this is actually Mike or this is actually Killian, that there's some charge for that, that if it's being used that way.
I see benefit there, but then there's also the fact of, you can use that data in ways it probably shouldn't be as well. You know, I go in and I buy something that maybe I want just the credit card company to know about, but then now the company who's also doing the facial recognition is aware that I went and I bought X item that might be, you know, medication, or it might be something that, you know, if somebody found out that I'd purchased it, there might be something that damages my reputation or something like that. Also, it also places you in that time at that place. You know, it could be that your card was being used by somebody who gave it to. But, you know, I was at Dwayne Reed on Tuesday at 2 p.m. You have that, not just from the facial recognition standpoint, but the physical location standpoint, you could be used to track your movement, which scares me a little bit too.
From the anti-fraud perspective, I'm going to shockingly agree with Mike here. I like the idea of them using it for that aspect. I think probably all of us here have had our credit cards stolen a number of times at this point, and it would have saved a lot of time and hassle if there would have been another type of verification when using that, you know, check it against something else. So in that respect, I can see it definitely being an improvement. But to Chris's point, there has to be a way to implement it safely and effectively, which doesn't really violate our privacy. My kind of biggest concern, like Chris said, is just using it for general tracking. I don't like the idea of them following me around to advertise to me or whatever. Privacy should exist somewhere outside of our head, I think. And, you know, with the kind of ubiquity of cameras everywhere, there are plenty of instances where this is ripe for abuse.
So is it this particular implementation, or do you think the government should have some sort of ID for everyone, that there's like a national ID, or like there's, you know, like Estonia has, like everyone has almost like the US military has like CAC cards, that, you know, that it's a public key infrastructure. You have a unique digital key that represents you and a whole government system just for identity. Like, is that something you're okay with, or do you think that goes too far in and of itself?
I think it's a much better approach than what we have with social security numbers now, because they're fairly immutable for our whole lifetime. I feel like with a public-private key system or the military CAC cards, there is a process to get it changed if there's a compromise. Depending on how it's implemented, there's also potentially some, you know, non-repudiation as well too, if you have multiple factors with that. So it could be the presence of a physical card and the cryptographic key, and then, you know, a password or a PIN or your face. I think if it's, again, implemented right, it could go to great lengths to improve security without really damaging our privacy.
What about a different kind of tracking? You were worried about location tracking. Previously, we talked a little bit about the pros and cons of a digital pill, but what do you think about trackers bundled with DNA testing kits?
Point of clarification, I believe these are trackers bundled with the apps that go with the digital,
right?
With the DNA identification kits and with the websites that go with them and things.
So the question really is where do you draw the line between location tracking and other types of tracking?
I think I'm more on the application development side than other people, and probably much more than the people, than the reporters writing this, naturally. I think something a lot of people that are outside the technology sector do not realize just how much everything is held together with like duct tape and baling wire. Like every app framework, every stack, every storage system, a lot of what Varonis does is try to fix those issues where, you know, you've had a company that's been bought and resold and the division split off and their network now is all sorts of weird fragmented and people have permissions where they don't. And on the application side, you have those same sort of issues where you have random app crashes in Android version, you know, 5.2.6a in China because, you know, there's some weird extra thing there. And a lot of these services that are mentioned specifically in here are for things like that. Like, we need to know how often our app is crashing so we can make it not crash. It's just a baseline for anybody using it. It's a tracker. It tracks how much the app is crashing. I don't know if there's a huge privacy concern there.
Well, I'm looking at the list that I saw on the screenshot of that tweet. The one that stands out to me as potentially problematic is DoubleClick. I mean, Crashlytics makes sense from what the perspective you're talking about there. I get it. DoubleClick, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, that's for ads specifically, right?
It's for ads, but they also do analytics.
I feel like a lot of consumers who use our apps or any kind of app, that they should be involved in the decision-making of their personal information. Knowing is better than not knowing. And I think that's part of what the writers are alarmed with, is people should know about this.
I agree, but I think it gets cumbersome. And so something I saw on Twitter was like, if every time you made a credit card transaction, if there was like a 10-page form you had to sign that, all right, well, we're going to share this data with a third party, not your name, but just like general trends. And they're going to do predictive learning to see what sort of inventory we're supposed to have at our store. Like a real common thing is like famously kind of like Walmart has up to like 50 to 60% different inventory at different stores just based upon like buying habits. And so like if you had to sign a form that said, okay, there's a company in Silicon Valley that does artificial intelligence, machine learning to figure this stuff out for us so we can be 3% more efficient. And you had to sign that every time you checked out, like, would you be okay with that? Is that too weird? Is that bad data?
I know the reason this stands out to me is, I mean, I understand from a retail perspective, that all makes sense. The thing that gets me here is that it's two things that probably shouldn't go together are medical data and advertising. DNA kits, it really comes down to what data this is actually capturing and passing back for me. Because if it's double clicking, it's just like, oh, hey, we're serving you ads, you know, based off of information that came from this DNA kit. They could take that and say, well, you know, this person is from this this country or this region, has this in their heritage, has the potential for this, and this in terms of genetic diseases, and then tries to sell you something as a result of it. That's where it gets spooky for me. Now, the thing, again, it comes back to, what does DoubleClick receive? What do they capture? How do they handle it? And I it's the kind of stuff that you probably should be aware of, but I definitely see your point, Mike. If that was the case with every single transaction you did with technology, it'd become cumbersome, it'd become impossible. This, I do think, might be, for me at least, that's the one part that scares me and that I think we need more information on to have like a clear opinion on whether or not this is acceptable or ethical.
So what about the replayable scripts that track your cursor? So it's important to know your customer. You want to get to know them, but where do you draw the line between getting to know your customers by just talking to them and seeing what they buy, or just, you know, it's just easier to follow your cursor.
This is a shocking confession. This is public information. Like, you can go onto the Varonis site and see this, but we use Hotjar, which is one of these, to help track this. And we had an issue with a company called Lever that we use for application intake if you want to get a job with Varonis, which I would recommend because it's been great working here. Maybe I'll get fired for this. But we used Hotjar to replay what was happening on the job application page because there was this crazy bug where like one out of every 10 times it would just not display any information because there was like an unescaped HTML thing and how it was embedded, and it was a big mess. And so we used this very specifically to figure out what the issue was, which browsers it was happening in, and then fix it. So, you know, we could have more people apply and, you know, make sure the site worked as it was supposed to. It was tremendously useful. It wasn't, I feel like, spying on people so much as, you know, spying on what was wrong with our website. And I know there's a big reflexive thing of like, oh my gosh, someone's here staring at my cursor as it moves around the screen. And that's not really how it comes about. It comes about much more as, oh, all the Windows users with this, you know, particular version of Microsoft Edge had an issue with the site.
Really, the problem comes down to if it's capturing, you know, just mouse movement or page interaction versus user input, which is the big scary part of the article, that some are capturing all of the information in the user input fields, which is a big problem. Even if it's configured not to capture things like, you know, usernames and passwords, there still could be other conditions. I think it mentioned like medical conditions, if you're searching for something that could be shared. Particularly, I think the other big problem is a lot of them use unencrypted connections to send some of this back to the provider, depending on what it is. So you could have some identifiable information being sent unencrypted over the internet about some of this information.
I don't think that's happening. You know, most of this stuff is on the marketing side, and most of those, because of browser features, will just fail to work. That if you try to do, if in Chrome right now you load up a page over SSL and then you try to make an unencrypted connection out of it by, you know, Ajax, JavaScript or things, it will throw warnings. It will stop that from happening. And that's just a browser feature. So for these companies to meaningfully interact with other sites, like, that needs to happen. Definitely think everything should be encrypted. Definitely think everything should be handled responsibly. With all of this, I just want to actually like deal with the actual facts. And I get very frustrated that a lot of these articles are written in a very lurid way where it just like throws out like two topics and goes like, oh my gosh, you should be terrified. And I don't think that's helpful.
Do you think it is or is not true that there are some of those scripts that will capture all user input?
Oh, I think it's 100% true. But I think where this stuff is used is not to be to make a HIPAA compliant application, which is something I've done like at a previous company. I used to work for a health information services company that worked with the Navy and hospitals. To do that, you need to you know, have compliant agreements with all third parties. You need to do all the work. You need to make sure things are reasonably secured and encrypted just as a basis for getting started with this. You know, if you're given the tools and there's a framework and there's literally legislation about like doing this stuff properly, it should be done properly. That's not to say you can't screw it up. Like, you definitely could. You definitely could go in and take something that's a session replay, which is kind of a security term that's being used in this other way, to like look at where the mouse goes. And you could put that into something that does someone's medical history intake, and you could create a HIPAA violation. But that is not the norm. And I think, you know, there's a reason there's, you know, chief security officers and companies is to find and do these things.
I think you're making a lot of assumptions, and I'll qualify that. I think you're entirely correct that all of your points about how to make a HIPAA compliant application should be followed.
Yeah.
I think that we've seen so many times in the news that even the most basic security, like patching, like just stuff that shouldn't even be thought about, is not being done. And I think the default tendency for a lot of people is we're just going to capture everything and sort it out later and deal with it if there's a problem. And I think that's where we get into trouble. And I don't disagree with you. I think there are frameworks and I think there are things that people should do, but I think that they're going to say, hey, we want these analytics. And maybe 99% of the analytics are benign to, again, track the mouse movement to make sure the page is working efficiently to troubleshoot problems. But I think the default tendency is to collect as much information as you can, if you need it or not, and deal with it later. That tends to get us into a lot of problems.
You know, that's very true. And I think where there is a big unspoken line in these things is sort of the marketing side versus the application side.
Do we have a tool of the week?
Yes, we have a cool tool of the week called Sword. My hope is that someday I get to make my own security utility and name it something awesome like Sword. But this is the Sword Dropbox. It's an OpenWRT. So OpenWRT is a firmware that you can load up on to Wi-Fi enabled devices. And this is a DIY disposable pen test tool. And what it is, it's a little box with a circuit in it and some connections. And you could conceivably go into something like a co-working space, and you wanted to try to like steal everyone's information off of the network at the co-working space. And you would go up to a wireless access point, and you would plug this in alongside it, and it would start siphoning off a lot of that information, and do this in such a way that that it'd be very easy for you to exfiltrate all that information. And so it's real neat. And so it's sort of an interesting thing as a practical application of needing physical security on things, of needing, you know, to monitor the network and the types of traffic and things are on it. And it's neat to me because, you know, a lot of the things we deal with are such, are so software based and they aren't so physical based, that this is kind of a neat tool for that. So the SWORD Dropbox.
Thanks to Mike Buckby, Killian Engler, Chris Kaiser, and all our listeners for joining us today. If you want to follow us on Twitter to find some of the stories we're discussing, you can find us at infosec_podcast. Thanks, and we'll meet up again soon. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.